Sometimes, when I'm really missing him, I tell myself that maybe it wasn't that bad. Maybe I could put up with him when he's at his worst, just so I can have him when he's at his best. She puts her hand on top of mine and rubs her thumb back and forth. I know exactly what you mean, Lily. But the last thing you want to do is lose sight of your limit. Please don't allow that to happen. I have no idea what she means by that. She sees the confusion in my expression, so she squeezes my arm and explains in more detail. We all have a limit, what we're willing to put up with before we break. When I married your father, I knew exactly what my limit was. But slowly, with every incident, my limit was pushed a little more. And a little more. The first time your father hit me, he was immediately sorry. He swore it would never happen again. The second time he hit me, he was even more sorry. The third time it happened, it was more than a hit. It was a beating. And every single time, I took him back. But the fourth time, it was only a slap. And when that happened, I felt relieved. I remember thinking, at least he didn't beat me this time. This wasn't so bad. She brings the napkin up to her eyes and says, every incident chips away at your limit. Every time you choose to stay, it makes the next time that much harder to leave. Eventually, you lose sight of your limit altogether, because you start to think, I've lasted 5 years now. What's five more? She grabs my hands and holds them while I cry. Don't be like me, Lily. I know that you believe he loves you, and I'm sure he does. But he's not loving you the right way. He doesn't love you the way you deserve to be loved. If Ryle truly loves you, he wouldn't allow you to take him back. He would make the decision to leave you himself so that he knows for a fact he can never hurt you again. That's the kind of love a woman deserves, Lily. I wish with all my heart that she didn't learn these things from experience. I pull her to me and hug her. For whatever reason, I thought I would have to defend myself to her when I came over here. Not once did I think I would come over here and learn from her. I should know better. I thought my mother was weak in the past, but she's actually one of the strongest women I know. Mom, I say, pulling back, I want to be you when I grow up. She laughs and brushes the hair from my face. I can see in the way she looks at me that she'd trade spots with me in a heartbeat. She's feeling more pain for me in this moment than she ever felt for herself. I want to tell you something, she says. She reaches for my hands again. The day you gave your father's eulogy, I know you didn't freeze up, Lily. You stood at that podium and refused to say a single good thing about that man. It was the proudest I have ever been of you. You were the only one in my life who ever stood up for me. You were strong when I was scared. A tear falls from her eye when she says, "Be that girl, Lily. Brave and bold." Chapter 33. What am I going to do with three car seats? I'm sitting on Elisa's couch, staring at all the stuff. She threw me a baby shower today. My mother came. Ryle's mother even flew in for it, but she's in the guest room sleeping off her jet lag now. The girls from the floral shop came, and a few friends from my old job. Even Devin came. It was actually a lot of fun, despite the fact that I've been dreading it for the past several weeks. That's why I told you to start a registry so none of the gifts would be duplicated, Elisa says. I sigh. I guess I can have Mom return hers. She's bought me enough stuff as it is. I stand up and start gathering all the gifts. Marshall already said he'd help me carry them down to my apartment, so Elisa helps me throw everything inside trash bags. I hold them open while she picks everything up from the floor. I'm almost 30 weeks pregnant now, so she doesn't get the easier job of holding open the trash. We have everything bagged up, and Marshall is on his second trip down to my apartment, when I open Elisa's front door, prepared to drag a trash bag full of gifts to the elevator. What I'm not prepared for is Ryle, who is standing on the other side of the door looking back at me. We both look equally as shocked to see each other, considering we haven't spoken since our fight 3 months ago. This encounter was bound to happen, though. I can't be best friends with my husband's sister and live in the same building as him without eventually running into him. I'm sure he knew I was having the shower today, since his mother flew in for it, but he still looks a little surprised when he sees all the stuff behind me. It makes me wonder if him showing up just as I'm leaving is a coincidence or a suitable convenience. He looks down at the trash bag I'm holding and he takes it from my hands.
Let me get this.
I let him. He takes that bag and another one down to the apartment while I gather my things. He and Marshall are walking back inside the apartment as I'm preparing to walk out. Ryle grabs the last bag of stuff and begins to head toward the front door again. I'm following behind him when Marshall gives me a silent look, asking me if I'm okay with Ryle going downstairs with me. I nod. I can't keep avoiding Ryle forever, so now is as good a time as any to discuss where we go from here. It's only a few floors between their apartment and mine, but the elevator ride down with Ryle feels like the longest it's ever taken. I catch him staring at my stomach a couple of times, and it makes me wonder how it must feel, going 3 months without seeing me pregnant. My apartment door is unlocked, so I push it open and he follows me inside. He takes the last of the stuff to the nursery, and I can hear him moving things around, opening boxes. I stay in the kitchen and clean things that don't even need cleaning. My heart is in my throat, knowing he's in my apartment. I don't feel scared of him in this moment. I just feel nervous. I wanted to be more prepared for this conversation because I absolutely hate confrontation. But I know we need to discuss the baby and our future. I just don't want to. Not yet, anyway. He walks down the hallway and into the kitchen. I catch him looking at my stomach again. He glances away just as quickly.
Do you want me to assemble the crib while I'm here?
I should probably say no, but he's half responsible for the child growing inside of me. If he's going to offer physical labor, I'm going to take it, no matter how angry I still am at him. Yeah, that would be a big help. He points toward the laundry room.
Is my toolbox still in there?
I nod and he heads toward the laundry room. I open the refrigerator and face it so I don't have to watch him walk back through the kitchen. When he's finally in the nursery again, I close the refrigerator and press my forehead against it as I grip the handle. I breathe in and out as I try to process everything that's happening inside of me right now. He looks really good. It's been so long since I've seen him, I forgot how beautiful he is. I have an urge to run down the hallway and jump into his arms. I want to feel his mouth on mine. I want to hear him tell me how much he loves me. I want him to lie down next to me and put his hand on my stomach like I've imagined him doing so many times. It would be so easy. My life would be so much easier right now if I would just forgive him and take him back. I close my eyes and repeat the words my mother said to me. If Ryle truly loves you, he wouldn't allow you to take him back. That reminder is the only thing that prevents me from running down the hallway. I keep myself busy in the kitchen for the next hour as he remains in the nursery. I eventually have to walk past it to grab my phone charger from my room. On my way back down the hallway, I pause at the door of the nursery. The crib is assembled. He's even put the bedding on. He's standing over it, gripping the railing, staring inside the empty crib. He's so quiet and still, he looks like a statue. He's lost in thought and doesn't even notice me standing outside the doorway. It makes me wonder where his mind has wandered. Is he thinking about the baby? The child he won't even be living with when it sleeps in that very crib? Until this moment, I wasn't sure if he even wanted to be a part of the baby's life. But the look on his face proves to me that he does. I've never seen so much sadness in one expression, and I'm not even facing him straight on. I feel like the sadness he's feeling in this moment has absolutely nothing to do with me, and everything to do with the thoughts of his child. He glances up and sees me standing in the doorway. He pushes off the crib and shakes himself out of his trance.
"Finished,"
he says, waving a hand toward the crib. He begins putting his tools back inside the tool case.
"Is there anything else you need while I'm here?"
I shake my head as I walk over to the crib and admire it. Since I don't know if it's a boy or a girl, I decided to go with a nature theme. The bedding set is tan and green with pictures of plants and trees all over it. It matches the curtains and will eventually match a mural I plan to paint on the wall at some point. I also plan to fill the nursery with a few live plants from the shop. I can't help but smile, finally seeing it all start to come together. He even put up the mobile. I reach up and turn it on, and Brahms' lullaby begins to play. I stare at it as it makes a full spin, and then I glance back at Ryle. He's standing a few feet away, just watching me. As I stare back at him, I think about how easy it is for humans to make judgments when we're standing on the outside of a situation. I spent years judging my mother's situation. It's easy when we're on the outside to believe that we would walk away without a second thought if a person mistreated us. It's easy to say we couldn't continue to love someone who mistreats us when we aren't the ones feeling the love of that person. When you experience it firsthand, it isn't so easy to hate the person who mistreats you when most of the time they're your godsend. Ryle's eyes gain a little bit of hope, and I hate that he can see that my walls are temporarily lowered. He begins to take a slow step toward me. I know he's about to pull me to him and hug me, so I take a quick step away from him. And just like that, the wall is back up between us. Allowing him back inside this apartment was a huge step for me in itself. He needs to realize that. He hides whatever rejection he's feeling with a stoic expression. He tucks the toolbox under his arm and then grabs the box the crib came in. It's filled with all the trash from everything he opened and put together.
"I'll take this to the dumpster," he says, walking toward the door. "If you need help with anything else, just let me know, okay?"
I nod and somehow mutter, "Thank you." When I hear the front door close, I turn back and face the crib. My eyes fill with tears, and not for myself this time. Not for the baby. I cry for Ryle, because even though he's responsible for the situation he's in, I know how sad he is about it. And when you love someone, seeing them sad also makes you sad. Neither of us brought up our separation, or even a chance at reconciliation. We don't even talk about what's going to happen when this baby is born in 10 weeks. I'm just not ready for that conversation yet, and the least he can do for me right now is show me patience. The patience he still owes me from all the times he had none. Chapter 34. I finish rinsing the paint out of the brushes and then walk back to the nursery to admire the mural. I spent most of yesterday and all of today painting it. It's been 2 weeks since Ryle came over and put the crib together. Now that the mural is finished and I brought in a few plants from the store, I feel like the nursery is finally complete. I look around and feel a little sad that no one is here to admire the room with me. I grab my phone and text Elisa. Me. Mural is finished. You should come down and look at it. Elisa. I'm not home. Running errands. I'll come look at it tomorrow, though. I frown and decide to text my mother. She has to work tomorrow, but I know she'll be just as excited to see it as I was to finish it. Me. Feel like driving into town tonight? The nursery is finally finished. Mom. Can't. Recital night at school. I'll be here late. I can't wait to see it. I'll come by tomorrow. I sit down in the rocking chair and know that I shouldn't do what I'm about to do, but I do it anyway. Me. The nursery is finished. Do you want to come look at it? Every nerve in my body springs to life as soon as I hit send. I stare at my phone until his reply comes through. Ryle.
Of course. On my way down now.
I immediately stand up and begin making last-minute touches. I fluff the pillows on the love seat and straighten one of the wall hangings. I'm barely to the front door when I hear his knock. I open it and, damn it, he's wearing scrubs. I step aside as he makes his way in.
Elisa said you were painting a mural?
I follow him down the hallway toward the nursery. It's taken 2 days to finish, I tell him. My body feels like I ran a marathon, and all I did was walk up and down a stepladder a few times. He glances over his shoulder, and I can see the concern in his expression. He's worried that I was here doing it all on my own. He shouldn't worry. I've got this. When we make it to the nursery, he stops in the doorway. On the opposite wall, I painted a garden. It's complete with almost every fruit and vegetable I could think of that grows in a garden. I'm not a painter, but it's amazing what you can do with a projector and transparent paper.
Wow,
Ryle says. I grin because I recognize the surprise in his voice, and I know it's genuine. He walks into the room and looks around, shaking his head the whole time.
Lily, it's... wow.
If he were Elisa, I'd clap and jump up and down. But he's Ryle, and with the way things have been between us, that would be a little awkward. He walks over to the window where I set up a swing. He gives it a little push, and it begins moving from side to side. It also moves front to back, I tell him. I don't know if he even knows anything about baby swings, but I was pretty impressed by that feature. He walks over to the changing table and pulls one of the diapers out of the holder. He unfolds it and holds it up in front of him.
It's so tiny, he says. I don't remember Riley being this tiny.
Hearing him mention Riley makes me a little sad. We've been living apart since the night she was born, so I've never been able to see him interact with her. Ryle folds up the diaper and puts it back in the holder. When he turns to face me, he smiles, lifting his hands to motion around the room.
It's really great, Lily, he says. All of it. You're really doing...
His hands drop to his hips and his smile falters.
You're doing really well.
A thickness seems to form in the air around me. It's suddenly difficult to take in a full breath because, for whatever reason, I feel like I need to cry. I just really like this moment, and it saddens me that we couldn't spend the entire pregnancy full of moments like these. It feels good sharing this with him, but I'm also scared I might be giving him false hope. Now that he's here and he saw the nursery, I'm not sure what to do next. It's glaringly obvious that we need to discuss a lot of things, but I have no idea where to start. Or how. I walk over to the rocking chair and take a seat. Naked truth, I say, looking up at him. He exhales a huge breath and nods, then takes a seat on the sofa.
Please, Lily, please tell me you're ready to talk about this.
His reaction eases my nerves a little, knowing he's ready to discuss everything. I wrap my arms around my stomach and lean forward in the rocking chair. You go first. He clasps his hands together between his knees. He looks at me with so much sincerity, I have to glance away.
I don't know what you want from me, Lily. I don't know what role you want me to have. I'm trying to give you all the space you need, but at the same time, I want to help more than you possibly know. I want to be in our baby's life. I want to be your husband, and I want to be good at it. But I have no idea what's going through your head.
His words fill me with guilt. Despite what has happened between us in the past, he's still this baby's father. He has the legal right to be a father, no matter how I feel about it. And I want him to be a father. I want him to be a good father. But deep down, I'm still holding on to one of my biggest fears. And I know I need to talk to him about it. I would never keep you from your child, Ryle. I'm happy you want to be involved, but... He leans forward and buries his face in his hands with that last word. What kind of mother would I be if a small part of me doesn't have concern in regard to your temper, the way you lose control? How do I know something won't set you off while you're alone with this baby? So much agony floods his eyes, I think they might burst like dams. He begins to shake his head adamantly.
Lily, I would never...
I know, Ryle. You would never intentionally hurt your own child. I don't even believe it was intentional when you hurt me. But you did. And trust me, I want to believe that you would never do something like that. My father was only abusive toward my mother. There are many men... Women, even, who abuse their significant others without ever losing their temper with anyone else. I want to believe your words with all my heart, but you have to understand where my hesitation comes in. I'll never deny you a relationship with your child, but I'm going to need you to be really patient with me while you rebuild all the trust you've broken. He nods in agreement. He has to know that I'm giving him much more than he deserves.
Absolutely, he says. This is on your terms. Everything is on your terms, okay?
Ryle's hands come together again, and he begins to chew nervously on his bottom lip. I sense he has more to say, but he's doubting whether or not he should say it. Go ahead and say whatever you're thinking while I'm in the mood to talk about it. He tilts his head back and looks up at the ceiling. Whatever it is, it's hard for him. I don't know if it's because the question is hard to ask or because he's scared of the answer I might give him.
What about us? He whispers.
I lean my head back and sigh. I knew this question would come, but it's really difficult to give him an answer I don't have. Divorce or reconciliation are really the only two options we have, but neither is a choice I want to make. I don't want to give you false hope, Ryle, I say quietly. If I had to make a choice today, I'd probably choose divorce. But in all honesty, I don't know if I would be making that choice because I'm overloaded with pregnancy hormones or because it's what I really want. I don't think it would be fair to either of us if I made that decision before the birth of this baby. He blows out a shaky breath and then brings a hand up to the back of his neck, squeezing tightly. Then he stands up and faces me.
Thank you, he says. For inviting me over. For the conversation. I've been wanting to stop by since I was here a couple of weeks ago, but I didn't know how you'd feel about it.
I don't know how I would have felt about it either, I say with complete honesty. I try to push myself out of the rocking chair, but for some reason it's become a lot harder in the past week. Ryle walks over and reaches for my hand to help me up. I don't know how I'm supposed to last until my due date when I can't even get out of a chair without grunting. Once I'm standing, he doesn't immediately release my hand. We're just a few inches apart, and I know if I look up at him, I'll feel things. I don't want to feel things for him. He finds my other hand until he's holding both of them down at my sides. He threads his fingers through mine, and I feel it all the way to my heart. I press my forehead against his chest and close my eyes. His cheek meets the top of my head, and we stand completely still, both of us too scared to move. I'm scared to move because I might be too weak to stop him from kissing me. He's scared to move because he's afraid if he does, I'll pull away. For what feels like 5 full minutes, neither of us moves a muscle. "Ryle," I finally say, "can you promise me something?" I feel him nod. "Until this baby comes, please don't try to talk me into forgiving you. And please don't try to kiss me." I pull away from his chest and look up at him. I want to tackle one huge thing at a time, and right now my only priority is having this baby. I don't want to add any more stress or confusion on top of everything that's already happening. He squeezes both of my hands reassuringly. "One monumental life-changing thing at a time. Got it." I smile, relieved that we've finally had this conversation. I know I didn't make a final decision about the two of us, but I still feel like I can breathe easier now that we're on the same page. He releases my hands. "I'm late for my shift," he says, tossing a thumb over his shoulder. "I should get to work." I nod and see him out. It isn't until after I've shut the door and am alone in my apartment that I realize I have a smile on my face. I'm still incredibly angry with him that we're even in this predicament to begin with, so my smile is simply due to making a little headway. Sometimes parents have to work through their differences and bring a level of maturity into a situation in order to do what's best for their child. That's exactly what we're doing. Learning how to navigate our situation before our child is brought into the fold. Chapter 35. I smell toast. I stretch out on my bed and smile, because Ryle knows toast is my favorite. I lie here for a while before I even attempt to get up. It feels like it takes the effort of 3 men to roll me out of bed. I eventually take a deep breath and then throw my feet over the side, pushing myself up from the mattress. The first thing I do is pee. It's really all I do now. I'm due in 2 days, and my doctor says it could be another week. I started maternity leave last week, so this is my life right now. I pee and watch TV. When I make it to the kitchen, Ryle is stirring a pan of scrambled eggs. He spins around when he hears me walk in.
"Good morning," he says. "No baby yet?"
I shake my head and put my hand on my stomach. "Nope, but I peed 9 times last night." Ryle laughs.
"That's a new record."
He spoons some eggs onto a plate and then tosses bacon and toast on it. He turns around and hands me the plate, pressing a quick kiss to the side of my head.
"I gotta go. I'm already late. I'm leaving my phone on all day."
I smile when I look down at my breakfast. Okay, so I eat too. Pee, eat, and watch TV. "Thank you," I say cheerfully. I take my plate to the couch and turn on the TV. Ryle rushes around the living room, gathering his stuff.
"I'll come check on you at lunch. I might be working late tonight, but Elisa said she can bring you dinner."
I roll my eyes. "I'm fine, Ryle. The doctor said light bed rest, not complete debilitation." He starts to open the door, but pauses like he forgets something. He runs back toward me and leans down, planting his lips on my stomach.
I'll double your allowance if you decide to come out today,
he says to the baby. He talks to the baby a lot. I finally felt comfortable enough to let him feel the baby kick a couple of weeks ago, and since then, he stops by sometimes just to talk to my belly and doesn't even say much to me. I like it, though. I like how excited he is to be a father. I grab the blanket Ryle slept on the couch with last night and wrap it over me. He's been staying here for a week now, waiting for me to go into labor. I wasn't sure about the arrangement at first, but it's actually been really helpful. I still sleep in the guest bedroom. The third bedroom is now a nursery, which means the master bedroom is available for him to sleep in. But for whatever reason, he chooses to sleep on the couch. I think the memories in that bedroom plague him just as much as they plague me, so neither of us even bothers going in there. The last several weeks have been really good. Aside from the fact that there is absolutely no physical relationship between us at this point, things feel like they've kind of gone back to how they used to be. He still works a lot, but on the evenings he's off, I've started having dinner upstairs with all of them. We never eat alone as a couple, though. Anything that might feel like a date or a couple's thing, I avoid. I'm still trying to focus on one monumental thing at a time, and until this baby is born and my hormones are back to normal, I refuse to make a decision about my marriage. I'm sure I'm just using the pregnancy as an excuse to stall the inevitable, but being pregnant allows a person to be a little selfish. My phone begins to ring, and I drop my head into the couch and groan. My phone is all the way in the kitchen. That's like 15 feet from here. Ugh. I push myself off the couch, but nothing happens. I try it again, still sitting. I grab hold of the arm of my chair and pull myself up. Third time's the charm. When I stand, my glass of water spills all over me. I groan, but then I gasp. I wasn't holding a glass of water. Holy shit. I look down, and water is trickling down my leg. My phone is still ringing on the kitchen counter. I walk, or waddle, to the kitchen and answer it. Hello? Hey, it's Lucy. Quick question. Our order of red roses was damaged in shipment, but we've got the Levenberg funeral today, and they specifically wanted red roses for the casket spray. Do we have a backup plan?
Yeah, call the florist on Broadway. They owe me a favor.
Okay, thanks.
I start to hang up so I can call Ryle and tell him my water broke, but I hear Lucy say,
Wait!
I pull the phone back to my ear.
About these invoices, did you want me to pay them today or wait?
You can wait, it's fine. Again, I start to hang up, but she yells my name and starts firing off another question. Lucy, I say calmly, interrupting her, I'll have to call you about all this tomorrow. I think my water just broke. There's a pause.
Oh, go!
I hang up right when the first sign of pain shoots through my stomach. I wince and start dialing Ryle's number. He picks up on the first ring.
Do I need to turn around?
Yes.
Oh, God. Really? It's happening?
Yes.
Lily!
He says, excited. And then the phone goes dead. I spend the next few minutes gathering everything I'll need. I already have a hospital bag, but I feel kind of gross, so I jump in the shower to rinse off. The second burst of pain comes about 10 minutes after the first. I bend forward and clench my stomach, letting the water beat down on my back. Right when I near the end of the contraction, I hear the bathroom door swing open.
You're in the shower?
Ryle says,
Lily, get out of the shower, let's go.
Hand me a towel. Ryle's hand appears around the shower curtain a few seconds later. I try to fit the towel around me before pulling the shower curtain aside. It's odd, hiding your body from your own husband. The towel doesn't fit. It covers up my boobs, but then opens like an upside-down V over my stomach.
Another contraction hits as I'm stepping out of the shower. Ryle grabs my hand and helps me breathe through it, then walks me into the bedroom. I'm calmly picking out clean clothes to wear to the hospital when I glance over at him. He's staring at my stomach. There's a look on his face I can't decipher. His eyes meet mine, and I pause what I'm doing. There's a moment that passes between us where I can't tell if he's about to frown or smile. His face twists into both somehow, and he blows out a quick breath, dropping his eyes back to my stomach.
"You're beautiful," he whispers.
A pang shoots through my chest that has nothing to do with the contractions. I realize this is the first time he's seen my bare stomach. It's the first time he's witnessed what I look like with his baby growing inside of me. I walk over to him and take his hand. I place it on my stomach and hold it there. He smiles at me, brushing his thumb back and forth. It's a beautiful moment. One of our better moments.
"Thank you, Lily."
It's written all over him, the way he's touching my stomach, the way his eyes are looking back at mine. He's not thanking me for this moment or any moment that came before this one. He's thanking me for all the moments I'm allowing him to have with his child. I groan, leaning forward. Fucking hell! The moment is over. Ryle grabs my clothes and helps me into them. He picks up all the things I tell him to carry, and then we make our way to the elevator. Slowly. I have a contraction when we're halfway there. "You should call Elisa," I tell him when we pull out of the parking garage.
"I'm driving. I'll call her when we get to the hospital. And your mom."
I nod. I'm sure I could call them right now, but I kind of just want to make sure we make it to the hospital first, because it feels like this baby is being really impatient and wants to make its debut right here in the car. We make it to the hospital, but my contractions are less than a minute apart when we arrive. By the time the doctor scrubs in and they get me to a bed, I'm dilated to a 9. It's only 5 minutes later when I'm being told to push. Ryle doesn't even have a chance to call anyone. It all happens so fast. I squeeze Ryle's hand with every push. At one point, I think about how important the hand I'm squeezing is to his career, but he says nothing. He just allows me to squeeze it as hard as I possibly can, and that's exactly what I do. "The head is almost out," the doctor says. "Just a few more pushes." I can't even describe the next few minutes. It's a blur of pain and heavy breathing and anxiety and pure, unequivocal elation. And pressure. Such an enormous pressure. Like I'm about to implode. And then...
"It's a girl," Ryle says. "Lily, we have a daughter."
I open my eyes and the doctor is holding her up. I can only make out the outline of her because my eyes are full of too many tears. When they lay her on my chest, it's the absolute greatest moment of my life. I immediately touch her red lips and cheeks and fingers. Ryle cuts the umbilical cord, and when they take her from me to clean her up, I feel empty. A few minutes later, she's back on my chest again, swaddled in a blanket. I can do nothing but stare at her. Ryle sits on the bed next to me and pulls the blanket down around her chin so we can get a better look at her face. We count her fingers and her toes. She tries to open her eyes and we think it's the funniest thing in the world. She yawns and we both smile and fall even more in love with her. After the last nurse leaves the room and we're finally alone, Ryle asks if he can hold her. He raises the head of my bed to make it easier for both of us to sit on the bed. After I hand her to him, I lay my head on his shoulder, and we just can't stop staring at her.
"Lily," he whispers, "naked truth?"
I nod.
"She's so much prettier than Marshall and Elisa's baby."
I laugh and elbow him.
"I'm kidding," he whispers.
I know exactly what he means, though. Riley is a gorgeous baby, but no one will ever hold a candle to our own daughter.
What should we name her?
He asks. We didn't have the typical relationship during this pregnancy, so the baby's name hasn't been something we've discussed yet. I'd like to name her after your sister, I say, glancing at him. Or maybe your brother? I'm not sure what he thinks of that. I personally think naming our daughter after his brother could be somewhat healing for him, but he may not see it that way. He glances over at me, not expecting that answer.
Emerson?
He says.
That's kind of cute for a girl name. We could call her Emma or Emmy.
He smiles proudly and looks down at her.
It's perfect, actually.
He leans down and kisses Emerson on her forehead. After a while, I pull away from his shoulder so I can watch him hold her. It's a beautiful thing, seeing him interact with her like this. I can already see how much love he has for her just from the little time he's known her. I can see that he would do anything to protect her, anything in the world. It isn't until this moment that I finally make a decision about him. About us. About what's best for our family. Ryle is amazing in so many ways. He's compassionate. He's caring. He's smart. He's charismatic. He's driven. My father was some of these things, too. He wasn't very compassionate toward others, but there were times we spent together that I knew he loved me. He was smart, he was charismatic, he was driven, but I hated him so much more than I loved him. I was blinded to all the best things about him, thanks to all the glimpses I got of him when he was at his worst. 5 minutes of witnessing him at his worst couldn't make up for even 5 years of him at his best. I look at Emerson, and I look at Ryle, and I know that I have to do what's best for her. For the relationship I hope she builds with her father. I don't make this decision for me, and I don't make it for Ryle. I make it for her. Ryle. When he glances at me, he's smiling, but when he assesses the look on my face, he stops. I want a divorce. He blinks twice. My words hit him like voltage. He winces and looks back down at our daughter, his shoulders hunched forward.
Lily,
he says, shaking his head back and forth.
Please don't do this.
His voice is pleading, and I hate that he's been holding on to hope that I would eventually take him back. That's partly my fault, I know, but I don't think I realized what choice I was going to make until I held my daughter for the first time.
Just one more chance, Lily. Please.
His voice cracks with tears when he speaks. I know I'm hurting him at the worst possible time. I'm breaking his heart when this should be the best moment of his life. But I know if I don't do it in this moment, I might never be able to convince him of why I can't risk taking him back. I begin to cry, because this is hurting me as much as it's hurting him. Ryle, I say gently, what would you do if one of these days this little girl looked up at you and she said, Daddy, my boyfriend hit me. What would you say to her, Ryle? He pulls Emerson to his chest and buries his face against the top of her blanket.
Stop, Lily,
he begs. I push myself up straighter on the bed. I place my hand on Emerson's back and try to get Ryle to look me in the eyes. What if she came to you and said, Daddy, my husband pushed me down the stairs. He said it was an accident. What should I do? His shoulders begin to shake, and for the first time since the day I met him, he has tears. Real tears that rush down his cheeks
as he holds his daughter tightly against him. I'm crying too, but I keep going. For her sake. What if... My voice breaks. What if she came to you and said, My husband tried to rape me, Daddy. He held me down while I begged him to stop. But he swears he'll never do it again. What should I do, Daddy? He's kissing her forehead over and over, tears spilling down his face. What would you say to her, Ryle? Tell me. I need to know what you would say to our daughter if the man she loves with all her heart ever hurts her. A sob breaks from his chest. He leans toward me and wraps an arm around me.
I would beg her to leave him,
he says through his tears. His lips press desperately against my forehead, and I can feel some of his tears as they fall onto my cheeks. He moves his mouth to my ear and cradles both of us against him.
I would tell her that she is worth so much more, and I would beg her not to go back, no matter how much he loves her. She's worth so much more.
We become a sobbing mess of tears and broken hearts and shattered dreams. We hold each other. We hold our daughter. And as hard as this choice is, we break the pattern before the pattern breaks us. He hands her back to me and wipes his eyes. He stands up, still crying, still trying to catch his breath. In the last 15 minutes, he lost the love of his life. In the last 15 minutes, he became a father to a beautiful little girl. That's what 15 minutes can do to a person. It can destroy them. It can save them. He points toward the hallway, letting me know he needs to go gather himself. He's sadder than I've ever seen him as he walks toward the door. But I know he'll thank me for this one day. I know the day will come when he'll understand that I made the right choice by his daughter. When the door closes behind him, I look down at her. I know I'm not giving her the life I dreamed for her. A home where she lives with both parents who can love her and raise her together. But I don't want her to live like I lived. I don't want her to see her father at his worst. I don't want her to see him when he loses his temper with me to the point that she no longer recognizes him as her father. Because no matter how many good moments she might share with Ryle throughout her lifetime, I know from experience that it would only be the worst ones that stuck with her. Cycles exist because they are excruciating to break. It takes an astronomical amount of pain and courage to disrupt a familiar pattern. Sometimes it seems easier to just keep running in the same familiar circles, rather than facing the fear of jumping and possibly not landing on your feet. My mother went through it. I went through it. I'll be damned if I allow my daughter to go through it. I kiss her on the forehead and make her a promise. It stops here. With me and you. It ends with us. Epilogue. I push through the crowds of Boylston Street until I get to the cross street. I pull the stroller to a crawl and then stop at the edge of the curb. I pull the top of it back and look down at Emmy. She's kicking her feet and smiling like usual. She's a very happy baby. She has a calm energy about her, and it's addictive. How old is she? A woman asks. She's standing at the crosswalk with us, staring down at Emerson appreciatively. 11 months. She's gorgeous, she says. Looks just like you. Identical mouths. I smile. Thank you, but you should see her father. She definitely has his eyes. The sign flashes to walk, and I try to beat the crowd as we rush across the street. I'm already half an hour late, and Ryle has texted me twice. He hasn't experienced the joy of carrots yet, though. He'll find out today just how messy they are, because I packed plenty in her bag. I moved out of the apartment Ryle bought when Emerson was 3 months old. I got my own place closer to my work, so I'm within walking distance, which is great. Ryle moved back into the apartment he bought, but between visiting Elise's place and Ryle's days with Emerson, I feel like I'm still at their apartment building almost as much as I'm at mine. Almost there, Emmy. We make a right around the corner, and I'm in such a rush a man has to step out of our way and into the wall just to avoid being plowed over. Sorry, I mutter, ducking my head and making my way around him. Lily? I stop. I turn slowly, because I felt that voice all the way to my toes. There are only two voices that have ever done that to me, and Ryle's doesn't reach that far anymore. When I look back at him, his blue eyes are squinting against the sun. He lifts a hand to shield it, and he grins.
Hey.
Hi, I say, my frenzied brain trying to slow down and allow me to play catch-up. He glances at the stroller and points at it.
Is this your baby?
I nod, and he walks around to the front of the stroller. He kneels down and smiles widely at her.
Wow, she's gorgeous, Lily, he says. What's her name?
Emerson. We call her Emmy sometimes. He puts his finger in her hand, and she starts kicking, shaking his finger back and forth. He stares at her appreciatively for a moment, and then stands back up again.
You look great, he says.
I try not to give him an obvious once-over, but it's hard. He looks as good as ever, but this is the first time seeing him that I'm not trying to deny how gorgeous he turned out to be. A far cry from that homeless boy in my bedroom, yet somehow still exactly the same. I can feel the buzz of my text message going off in my pocket again. Ryle. I point down the street. We're really late, I say. Ryle has been waiting for half an hour. When I say Ryle's name, there's a sadness that reaches Atlas's eyes, but he tries to disguise it. He nods and slowly steps aside for us to pass. It's his day to have her, I clarify, saying more in those six words than I could in most full conversations. I see the relief flash in his eyes. He nods and points behind him.
Yeah, I'm running late too. Opened a new restaurant on Boylston last month.
Wow, congratulations. I'll have to take Mom there to check it out soon. He smiles.
You should. Let me know and I'll make sure and cook for you myself.
There's an awkward pause, and then I point down the street. We have to
go,
he says with a smile. I nod again and then duck my head and continue walking. I have no idea why I'm reacting this way, like I don't know how to hold a normal conversation. When I'm several yards away, I glance back over my shoulder. He hasn't moved. He's still watching me as I walk away. We round the corner and I see Ryle waiting beside his car outside the floral shop. His face lights up when he sees us approaching.
Did you get my email?
He leans down and begins to unstrap Emerson. Yeah, about the playpen recall? He nods as he pulls her out of the stroller.
Didn't we buy one of those for her?
I press the buttons to fold the stroller and then walk it to the back of his car. Yeah, but it broke like a month ago. I threw it in the dumpster. He pops the trunk and then touches Emerson's chin with his fingers.
Did you hear that, Emmy? Your mommy saved your life.
She smiles up at him and slaps playfully at his hand. He kisses her on the forehead and then picks up her stroller and tosses it in the trunk. I slam the trunk shut and lean over to give her a quick kiss. Love you, Emmy. See you tonight. Ryle opens the back door to put her in the car seat. I tell him goodbye, and then I start to head back down the street in a rush.
Lily,
he yells.
Where are you going?
I'm sure he expected me to walk to the front door of my store since I'm already late opening it. I probably should, but the nagging in my gut won't go away. I need to do something about it. I spin around and walk backward. There's something I forgot to do. I'll see you when I pick her up tonight. Ryle lifts Emerson's hand and they wave goodbye to me. As soon as I round the corner, I break out into a sprint. I dodge people, bump into a few, and cause one lady to curse at me, but it's all worth it the moment I see the back of his head. Atlas! I yell. He's heading in the other direction, so I keep pushing through the crowd. Atlas! He stops walking, but he doesn't turn around. He cocks his head like he doesn't want to fully trust his ears. Atlas! I yell again. This time, when he turns with purpose. His eyes meet mine, and there's a 3-second pause while we both stare at each other. But then we both start walking toward each other, determination in every step. 20 steps separate us. 10, 5, 1. Neither of us takes that final step. I'm out of breath, panting, and nervous. I forgot to tell you Emerson's middle name. I put my hands on my hips and exhale. It's Dory. He doesn't immediately react, but then his eyes crinkle a little in the corners. His mouth twitches like he's forcing back a smile. What a perfect name for her. I nod and smile, and then stop. I'm not sure what to do now. I just needed him to know that, but now that I've told him, I didn't really think of what I'd do or say next. I nod again and then glance around me, throwing a thumb over my shoulder. Well, I guess I'll... Atlas steps forward, grabs me, and pulls me hard against his chest. I immediately close my eyes when he wraps his arms around me. His hand goes up to the back of my head, and he holds me still against him as we stand, surrounded by busy streets, blasts of horns, people brushing us as they pass in a hurry. He presses a gentle kiss into my hair, and all of that fades away. Lily, he says quietly, I feel like my life is good enough for you now. So whenever you're ready. I clench his jacket in my hands and keep my face pressed tight against his chest. I suddenly feel like I'm 15 again. My neck and cheeks flush from his words. But I'm not 15. I'm an adult with responsibilities and a child. I can't just allow my teenage feelings to take over. Not without a little reassurance, at least. I pull back and look up at him. Do you donate to charity? Atlas laughs with confusion. Several. Why? Do you want kids someday? He nods.
Of course I do.
Do you think you'll ever want to leave Boston? He shakes his head.
No, never. Everything is better here, remember?
His answers give me the reassurance I need. I smile up at him. Okay, I'm ready. He pulls me tight against him, and I laugh. With everything that has happened since the day he came into my life, I never expected this outcome. I've hoped for it a lot, but until now I wasn't sure if it would ever happen. I close my eyes when I feel his lips meet the spot on my collarbone. He presses a gentle kiss there, and it feels just like the first time he kissed me there all those years ago. He brings his mouth to my ear, and in a whisper he says,
You can stop swimming now, Lily. We finally reached the shore.
Note from the author. My earliest memory in life was from the age of 2.5 years old. My bedroom didn't have a door and was covered by a sheet nailed to the top of the doorframe. I remember hearing my father yelling, so I peeked out from the other side of the sheet just as my father picked up our television, and threw it at my mother, knocking her down. She divorced him before I turned 3. Every memory beyond that of my father